Oh, we can start with the advert.
Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Welcome to the first ever Inside EVs podcast. Today, we'll be talking about the production delay of the Rivian R1T all-electric pickup truck, the Tesla Model Y teardown video series by Munro & Associates, the Tesla Model S performance increase with its new Cheetah Stance launch mode, and much, much more. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast, the weekly podcast from Inside EVs. I'm Dominic Chioni. I'm Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. This is episode number one. Today we have with us Tom Malogny. He is a longtime EV advocate and an Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV Daily News podcast and Kyle Connor from Out of Spec Motoring, the YouTube channel, and a contributor now to Inside EVs as well. So, gentlemen, how are you all doing?
Good.
Doing fine.
Yeah, everything's good.
All right.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for April the 7th, 2023. This is episode 157 and the third anniversary of the show. Thanks for joining us today and for the 156 weeks prior. We really appreciate it. So on today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Hyundai Ioniq 6, the Nissan Ariya, and the 2023 Toyota Prius, and the newly revealed tech specs of the Ram REV or REV, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EV's editor, forum moderator, and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the indefatigable Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mastermind, Mr. Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Welcome, everybody.
Greetings.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey guys. Happy anniversary, I guess, right?
The anniversary.
Yeah. That's amazing. I tell you, it's been a pleasure the last 3 years working with you guys. This has been a lot of fun, hasn't it been?
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Dominic, what the heck happened to your hair?
I know, right?
How do you know hair can grow that fast?
I was like all respectable looking one moment, and then boom, like it's all over my face. It's like out of control. All right. So I guess we'll just jump right into this, right? We got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. It's been a busy week. So let's kick this off with what we've been driving. So Tom, last week we talked about your interview with Ford CEO Jim Farley, but I just want to remind people that it's now up on your channel, State of Charge, and we have a post supporting that on Inside EVs, and you can find that just by typing Jim in the search on the site, or Farley will work too. I tried them last night. They both work. Okay. It's time to get heretical. Heretical? Yes. Okay. But please don't burn us at the stake. So we don't often talk about plug-in hybrids on the show, but this week, Tom, you posted your first drive review of the new Toyota Prius. So the Prius has been a Toyota model since like 1997, and they finally made one that looks genuinely attractive. It's much more powerful and has like a much improved all-electric range, like 39 to 44 miles, depending on the trim level. It's got enough range that you actually did a 70-mile-an-hour range test with it and got a pretty fantastic result despite like bad weather. So tell us about the latest Prius and what it's like to drive and why we should talk about a hybrid on the Inside EVs podcast.
All right. So to be clear, what I drove was the Prius Prime. Not the regular Prius, because they had the first drive event for the Prius a few months ago, and you know, I declined to go to that one. I'll only do the drives on vehicles that actually plug in, and we typically don't even do too many plug-in hybrid like first drive reviews. At least I think the team over at Motor One usually handles those. We punt it over to them, but this is a unique vehicle, and I thought it was important enough for us to do a first drive and check it out, because, you know, the Prius has been immensely popular throughout the years. And of recent years, the popularity has waned. There's a lot of reasons for that. The hybridization of Toyota's full line of vehicles has taken some of the luster off the Prius's brand. The Prius was the hybrid. It was the vehicle that had the best fuel economy and all this for many years. And Toyota sold millions of them. But the sales have dwindled, and they really don't sell a lot of Prius anymore. So for this next generation, Toyota kind of scrapped the game plan for the Prius, and they totally made it a completely different vehicle. It used to be, form following function, where it had to have a lot of cargo. It had to be efficient. And well, however it came out looking, well, that was just, a byproduct of making the vehicle do what we wanted it to do. But if you look at this last generation now, it's the opposite. It's kind of like we want it to look good, and hopefully it'll have enough cargo space and enough headroom and be efficient enough, to be a Prius. So it's an interesting vehicle. To put it in perspective, I mean, you could see the looks, obviously. I think anybody would say it's the best looking Prius we've ever had. I don't think that could even be argued, and looks are subjective, but it looks great. Walking up to it, walking around it, I'm like, I would drive this and not want to wear a face mask and glasses, like how I would feel with previous Prius. Like, I don't want anybody to see me in that. But I think it looks awesome. But driving wise, power wise, okay, the previous Prius Prime had 121 horsepower. This vehicle has 220 horsepower. That's 82% more power. When do you ever get a vehicle that the next generation has 80% more power than the previous generation? Like 25% is enormous, So that just tells you the priorities are in a completely different position for this vehicle. They Toyota emphasized driving experience over, the basic, the things that made the Prius a Prius, being super efficient, So, I mean, the steering felt better. The suspension felt better. It felt like it was a fun car to drive, which I could never say that before about a Prius. And I know I seem to be knocking previous generation Priuses here. The Prius was a wonderful car for what it was designed to do. It was the best at it for a long time. Economical transportation that offered utility and, that was, relatively affordable. And, that's why they sold so many of them. But Toyota's taken a completely different approach now. And the Prius Prime is well-balanced. It drives well. It's more of like third generation Volt than it is a Prius, in my opinion, where the Volt went for sporty and, performance and also having great economy. So I think they did a good job with it. It's unfortunate they didn't make an all-electric version. I know that would have been fantastic if they came out with the hybrid, the plug-in hybrid, and the all-electric version like many of the other automakers do. I think that would have been a good option. But hey, we all know we've beat to death here on this podcast how our feelings of how Toyota's positioning themselves with regards to fully electric vehicles. That's going to change, evidently, but it didn't change for this generation of Prius. So what we talk about, I was able to do a range test. I didn't think I was going to be able to when I first got there. There's very small loops that we're supposed to drive in, and I didn't know where the highways were going to be. But as it turns out, where we were staying in Carlsbad, I was like 1 mile from I-5. So nice. And again, I didn't know if the traffic was going to be bad. So often in California, you can't maintain 70 miles an hour on the highways because the traffic is so tough. So once I got out onto the highway, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to do this. And I just kept driving, and only for one short period for like 2 or 3 miles did I have to knock it down to like 62, 63 miles an hour. and that for such a short period of time, that barely is going to affect the results of the test. And I was able to go 34 miles before the gasoline engine kicked in. Now this new generation Prius, in addition to being more powerful, it's got a bigger battery, 13.6 kilowatt hour battery. The outgoing Prius Prime had an 8.8 kilowatt hour battery pack, so much bigger battery. And its EPA rated range is 44 miles when you get the SE. That's the entry level trim. It's a little bit lighter and it has 17 inch wheels, so it has a 44 mile EPA range rating. The XSE and XSE Premium, which I was driving, is a little heavier and it has 19 inch sport wheels, so that knocks the range down a little bit to 39 miles. So the vehicle I was driving has an EPA combined range rating of 39 miles per charge. I was able to get 34 miles at a constant 70 miles an hour in a driving rain on a highway that didn't have consistent elevation. You know, there was definitely an elevation change. I didn't map it out, but it wasn't as flat as I usually do them. There was at least a couple hundred miles of elevation change while I was driving. So in my opinion, that's a win. I'm certain if I had this vehicle here at home and I was driving around town and running errands and so forth, I could get 50 miles of all electric range before the gasoline engine turned on.
Yeah, I would bet. Yeah, 50 miles sounds very, very attainable going by, you know, what you were saying in your first drive video. Mm-hmm.
Right on. And Don is asking, what's the total estimated range with a full battery and tank? I think it was 550 for the XSE and XSE Premium, and 600 for the SE, although it might have been 600 and 650, but somewhere in that ballpark. So very, very long range when you combine the all electric with the gas tank.
Right.
I think it's like 52 miles per gallon average running in hybrid mode.
Right on. It looks a lot better on the interior too. That's the way. I didn't ever like that, like a huge center thing down the middle of the spine of the old Prius.
Into this thing, Tom. It looks awesome. It looks like it rips. The last gen Prius Prime, I actually did a track review against a Ferrari. Trying to remember, was it a Pista? I can't remember exactly what it was. Oh no, I chose the luxury for. I did like the Portofino, which is the cruiser. So I did a Prius Prime against the Portofino. The Prius Prime won because it had more USB ports and cup holders, of course. just like awesome to see Toyota go here. The one thing I think has to be said, and look, I see arguments on either side, was this should have been fully electric, or at least they should have had a fully electric Prius option. Why are they still stuck in the past with BZ4X and this isn't battery electric? Did you talk to them about that at all?
I did. And you'll get mixed answers from different Toyota representatives. After the drive, you know, you get to sit down, talk to engineers, and you get to talk to some of the program managers. And, you know, there were quite a few people, and they knew it was coming with me. They do their homework. They know who the people are at these events and what their positions are. So, you know, I they knew that I was going to come at them with this question. And, you know, some of the people said, you know, quite honestly, you know, I think that would have been something that we should have considered, but we didn't. And then I followed it up with, hey, you know, the disappointing thing to me, and we had a long discussion with this at dinner, actually, for hours with two of their Toyota reps, was that I said, look, you know, Toyota's been such a leader with technology and hybrids for so long. It's such a shame that you're falling behind in electrification. And, you know, some of them look at you and say, well, you know, we're not falling behind. We have so many miles and everything. And I say, but the point of the matter is, even just for perception, you know, You came out with one electric vehicle, the BZ4X, and let's face it, it's not that good. And you know, they looked at me and nobody disagreed with me at the table. I said, want to judge it against its peers as an electric vehicle, it's not a good electric vehicle. There's nothing about it that is cutting edge, is industry leading. It's actually, you know, behind the times. I said, and you're Toyota, for crying out loud. How come you don't have one EV, even if you know you're not going to sell a lot of them, even if it's a halo car, that you put out there and say, look, this is what we could do. we know batteries, and look at what we can do with batteries. But, you know, and nobody disagreed with me that, you know, they think that maybe that wouldn't have been a bad philosophy. But hey, it's not what the leadership, you know, over in Japan, the leadership has taken that position. But it's supposed to change now. They're saying the next couple of years we're going to have how many fully electric Toyotas coming out, and you know, let's see. But it is unfortunate because Toyota was a leader for so long with battery tech and hybrids, and it just seems like they're an also ran now with regards to, you know, electric vehicles.
Right, and there's so many startups today too. You know, there's a lot of people just like they want that market share that Toyota has had traditionally, and you know, Toyota's going to have to struggle, I think, to get. I don't know. Maybe they won't. I don't. They have this a great name, right?
Reputation. I don't know if they're going to struggle, Dom. I still believe, and maybe I'm just, you know, not being realistic here. I still believe that the minute they put their minds to making an outstanding electric car, we'll get an outstanding all-electric Toyota. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you can't just flip the switch and, you know, and do that. And maybe they're right. This is just my opinion. I do believe, because I know Toyota has more battery experience than even Tesla. They probably have more, you know, they've put out more high voltage traction batteries in electric vehicles than anybody, because they've been doing it for 25 years. They have fantastic engineers. Some of their you know, hybrid systems and even the fuel cell systems. I know we don't we're not going down the fuel cell way, but other manufacturers have paid to license Toyota technology in hybrids and fuel cells because their engineers are so good at alternative powertrains. So I'm certain they could make a kick-ass fully electric car if they wanted to. They simply didn't want to with the BZ4X.
Right. Yeah, it should be interesting. I did see that they're going to do some reorganization around their EV strategy now with the new president. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see how that pans out. But yeah.
But you know, with the Prius, going back to the Prius Prime, there's still a lot of people that don't want an electric car. Sure. You know, that this is going to appeal to them. And we talk about being an electric car and training wheels. You know, the people will have this Prius Prime. They'll learn the habits of plugging in, mm-hmm. and then they'll say, you know, I want more. You know, we saw that with Volt owners early on in 2010. You know, they loved their Volt, but mm-hmm. but then their next car was a fully electric car because they got used to plugging in. They said, this isn't too hard. This is pretty. It's pretty easy. It's actually better than getting gas. They did everything that they could to not fill up with the gas, and some Volt owners did such a great job at it, where even with the 30, 40 mile range, they never bought gas. They bought gas like once every 6 months. Well, if you could make a 40 mile EV car, the gas tank lasts for 6 months, you could sure as heck live with a BEV, you know? So I think we're going to see that with the plug-in hybrid Prius. In my opinion, look, I'm not a plug-in hybrid guy, but I understand there's room for it in the market. And I think this new generation Prius Prime kicks ass. I think it's a great driving experience. It looks great. It feels great sitting in the seat. You're going to get 40 to 50 miles of all electric range. You know, you're going to average well over 100 miles per gallon with this vehicle if you plug it in, you know, whenever you have the opportunity to. And one of the negatives I'll say is it only has a 16 amp onboard charger. Can only charge at 3.5 kilowatt. You know, even that's fine if you're going to, what's that?
Even on the top spec model?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so different than RAV4 Prime, which lets you go on the top spec to 6.6.
Yeah. You know, unless I missed something in the specs, I forgot to ask them that because I read the spec sheet and it just says, you know, 4 hours on level two, 11 hours on level one, no option for 6.6 kilowatt onboard charger. So that's disappointing that you can't charge faster. But let me go back and look at that. Geez, that would have been a big miss if I missed it. But hey, I've done it before. Everything I saw just showed me that the 16 amp and the original press release said, you know, it takes 4 hours to recharge. It didn't say, and with the optional onboard charger.
So I think it has a 16 amp. Whenever you would see it on that spreadsheet, they break it down by trim. It would just be on the right side that it has.
Yeah, it didn't say 30 amp or 32 amp. So, you know, that's what it is. And they're figuring everybody is just going to come in and once a day plug in at night. Now, if you do that at night, it doesn't matter if you've got a 16 amp or if it had an 80 amp onboard charger, yeah, because it's going to recharge overnight. But there are people that would, like you and I, Kyle, if we had one, drive 10, 20 miles, come back to your house and plug it in. And then an hour or two later, we'd run out and do another 30 or 40 mile drive. And, you know, you could drive 60 miles in a day with it on battery. You can't do that with a 16 amp onboard charger.
Yeah.
Having a look at the other reviewers that put theirs live 2 days ago, presume that was when we were allowed to.
Yes.
Cars.com says the Prius Prime's onboard charger maxes out at 3.5 kilowatts. So yeah, other outlets are saying the same, which is it compares it to the Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid that says, you know, sort of plug-in hybrids should do 7.2 kilowatts. So I guess the RAV4 can do twice that. So
only if you spec the max model though.
Level. Oh. But hey, I mean, look, let's look at it the other way. This could be a plug-in hybrid where they deem to put a CCS plug on, like some German cars do. That yeah, drives me.
I'm glad they did not do that.
Yeah, that drives me mad when I see that. I'm like, no, BMW, what are you doing?
Well, the Mitsubishi still has the CHAdeMO plug on the Outlander plug-in hybrid. The only thing I will say as far as the slower charging, the Prius Prime, actually, when you compare it to the other plug-in hybrids, it does have a very small battery.
Right.
Now, it's 13.8 kilowatt hour is the max, is the full capacity. You only get about 11 kilowatt hour out of that because it reserves the bottom, like 10% or so for hybrid driving, so that it always has a healthy amount of battery to blend the hybrid driving. You can't just drain it down to nothing and then the gasoline engine is doing all of the work. So, you know, when you put it that way, the most you can recuperate is 11 kilowatt hour. How big of an onboard charger do you need? You know, the 16 amp onboard charger is probably going to refill it. They said about 4 hours, probably going to fill it in 3.5 hours or so. So it's still pretty quick, even with a small onboard charger.
Right. Yeah. All right. I don't know. We need to talk about any more Prius. I'm done with Prius. Tom, you done with Prius? I mean, I like the idea of the, you know, plug-in hybrids, and because like you were saying, you know, that's a car that some people just aren't ready for electric yet. And, you know, they feel comfortable getting into this, and it means like more electric miles if they bought, a straight hybrid or, you know, something that doesn't plug in. It's not, I don't know, the more electric miles, the better is the way that I look at it. So
I think the same. People think I'm going to hate it because it's Toyota, but the more choice that people have on the market, the better, because you'll make your own choice. So adding plug-in hybrids, as long as it doesn't stop any great pure electric cars being made, and in Toyota's case, maybe it would be, but it's not as if we're not going to get, you know, a Model Y because Toyota came out with a plug-in hybrid, right, then I think it adds to the market. It wouldn't be for me, but I think the more choice we have on our shelves, it's like, you know, it's like pre-grated cheese, right? People who buy that have really given up on life. My wife buys pre-grated cheese, and it's like, it's not that onerous really to just to grate cheese, but she still buys it in the packet, right? So, but I don't want to ban pre-grated cheese. So I wouldn't want to stop people buying a plug-in hybrid, even if I think if you buy one, you've probably given up on life a little bit. I'm joking. They're useful in a way.
One last thing I want to note that I found interesting. Toyota put a lot of like work in the regenerative braking. And what I mean in that is there's so many different settings. You have the regular setting where if you just get in the car, it defaults to regular regen. You could put the vehicle in B drive mode, which increases the regen. Then depending on which drive mode you have it in, normal, eco, or sport, the regenerative braking is adjusted. You get the most regen in sport. But then if you go into the driver's display and you go through like four different screens, scroll through different screens, there's a thing called deceleration modes. And there's three levels of deceleration. So there's like nine different levels I don't think anybody is going to go into the driver's display. Because first of all, it was really hard to find. I had to have the Toyota rep show me how to get to it. And the weird thing about it is it doesn't stick. So you could set one of those three levels of regen And then as soon as you turn the car off, it resets. So, you know, I don't think many people are going to go and do that. But I thought it was interesting that they have so many different ways to adjust the regenerative braking on it.
Right. Great conversation about cheese going on here in the comments. A cheese elitist, if you will.
I mean, look, I prefer a soft cheese anyway, and you can't even grate that. So if you give me something I can spread, I'm very happy. So
that's right.
The smellier and the spreadier, the better. But that's just my personal life choices.
Right.
We should move on.
I'm thinking about cheese.
We should. Okay. We should probably move on. It's been 3 years of chaos.
All right, so Kyle, 3 years of chaos.
Actually, before we get to me, I just want to commend Tom really quick on hosting panels at the New York Auto Show. It was pretty cool. Yes. He had representatives from like every major DC player, or at least a portion of them. And I haven't watched the videos yet, but apparently they're all on YouTube, so we can watch Tom moderate some stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Tom? Because that was really neat.
Tom, where can we find these?
Yeah, it was. They have on either the Facebook page or the YouTube channel of the New York Power Authority. I know that's one place. I think they're being hosted in other places too. But I know the New York Power Authority's Facebook page and their YouTube channel has the videos. It's about an hour long, and I was asked to moderate a panel on DC fast charging, the state of DC fast charging. So we had representatives from the New York Power Authority, from Electrify America, from the state of New York, because it was hosted by New York Power Authority, also from Chargeway, Matt Teske, Kyle knows. It's an app that kind of helps people understand charging and levels of power. And we were supposed to have a representative from General Motors attend, but she couldn't make it because there was really bad weather. Her flight got canceled. Then she rebooked for the morning and that got delayed and she wouldn't have made it to the show. So it was kind of, we were scrambling at the last minute, and the New York Power Authority asked me, they're like, Tom, you probably know a lot of people here. Can you get somebody to come on? So I walked around and I saw the Autel booth. So, and I know that they're getting more into DC fast charging. I know Kyle went and spoke to the folks at Autel a while ago and you did a video on it. And so I went over and I ran into John Thomas. Kyle, did you talk to John? Yeah, he's the COO of Autel Energy. And I told him, I said, look, you feel like sitting on a panel and talking about charging? And he was like, yeah, I'll do it. So we got John to join in, and it was a good discussion. Yeah, this is a one-on-one discussion I had with John Markowitz, who's the e-mobility manager for the New York Power Authority. And he's kind of in charge of planning and implementing New York's Evolve DC fast charging network, which interestingly, New York, you think California is a leader in DC fast charging and you know, just electrification. New York State has the largest like state installed and run DC fast charging network in the country. So they're not waiting for Electrify America and EVgo and other companies to do it. New York State said, we're going to light up the state with DC fast charging. Now, the only problem, I mean, and it works great. I've used the Evolve Network many times to get up to Canada and to get up to upstate New York. The only, if I'm going to knock it, is they use equipment from all different manufacturers and different networks. So there's not a consistent way to start your charge. Now, Kyle and I won't have a problem with that. But if you're just a new person getting an EV, and you want to drive through the state and you're going to use the Evolve Network, you go to one charger and activate your charge. And now you go to the next one. It might be a different process, a different way to get your charge. So it's just, that's a little negative, but hey, that's in my opinion, a minor thing compared to the fact that New York went out there and is putting in a comprehensive network to cover the state. And I really give them credit for that. So when they asked me to host this panel, I said, yeah, I appreciate what you guys have been doing there. Sure, I'll come and do this. And it was a good time. We had a good discussion. If anybody wants to watch it, it's available on YouTube and on Facebook.
All right. Cool. Now I got something to do this afternoon. So Kyle,
and thanks for pointing that out, Kyle.
All right. So Kyle, last week we talked a lot about the Hyundai Ioniq 6, but we didn't talk about how it is to drive because those impressions were still under embargo. So now the embargo is lifted inquiry minds want to know how it is to drive. And you have a whole separate video about this. It's the efficiency in commuting traffic. Like, would you buy it over a Tesla Model 3? And I asked that because you also have another video tackling that topic. So you got like three videos on the
This will be the fastest review ever because how does it drive? Just like an Ioniq 5. What's the efficiency? It's 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour in commuting high speed traffic. It was pretty good, but this was the least efficient one. And would I buy it over a Tesla Model 3? No.
Oh, I didn't.
How could you? You don't have a good network. You have terrible app. You don't have good route planning. But like, these are the things that matter to me. Some people just don't want to drive a Tesla, which I totally respect. And then this is a very good second option. But you're going to have to go through hoops as a non-Tesla EV driver. If you just charge at home every day and then, you know, do a commute, then it would be fine. But then why are you buying a $60,000 car? This was 57. If you're just doing that, just buy a cheap Leaf or a Fiat 500e for that purpose. You don't need a long range, big electric car for, you know, the commute. So it should be a car that can do everything. They were so close, but they just can't match what the Model 3 offers for value on money. And I went in depth on that. Very good build quality, very good driving dynamics, unbelievably good driving dynamics. Thought the same thing about the Ioniq 5, very similar here. Everything is unbelievably refined from the hardware packaging and the way that the car looks and drives and feels. But then you go into the software and they just drop the ball. It's like they just took the software from their ICE cars and put it in an EV. And that has proven for every automaker that does not work. Sorry, you can't do that. You have to have EV specific software in there. You have to build everything from the ground up. This is the first car that Hyundai has produced that supports over the air updates to every module. I don't even know if it's every module, but it's to most modules. And the crazy thing about that is we have no idea because this is their first one. By the way, Tesla started doing this in 2012. This is the first one, and we don't know how frequently they're going to update the car. My guess is not very often. And it doesn't support plug and charge on Electrify America, which is their partner charging network, which is ridiculous. And look, they got the engineering so right. It is no question that car is built better than a Tesla. It drives more comfortably than a Tesla. It's still very efficient. However, for me, I can't recommend it over a Tesla. And I made a whole video about that. And the only reason I would is if you just refuse to buy a Tesla.
Right. So, but it's mostly down to like the software and I guess the charging networks then?
Well, you have to look at a vehicle in the full sphere of what it's intended to do. If, you know, for example, I love my Twizy, right? But it only does a very subset of things. Right. And I also have a Tesla Model 3 that can do, it's not really perfect in any category, but it can do a large amount of different things really well. This can do a large amount of things really well, except for certain items where the user, a power user, needs to come in and tune the drive settings properly and tune the regen settings to your liking and then tune the route planning and get, you know, preconditioning put on, which is menus deep. And these things are fine if Tom, you, Martin, or I drive the car. We can optimize it. I can get everything out of this car, no problem. And when you do, it's really good. But the car is not going to help you do that. So I'm not necessarily against the Ioniq 6. I think it's still one of the best cars I've driven all year. They were just so close to surpassing Tesla and just couldn't get there. And the amount of reviews that I saw saying this is a Tesla killer just blows my mind. Because like it shows how many journalists don't spend time with Teslas.
Tesla doesn't make that easily, but
No, they really do. Cause you go to Hertz and $76 a day, you can rent a Model 3.
Right. But they're not delivered to their, you know, you're doing like a lot of writers have, you know, cars every week delivered
that's
to the
ridiculous.
Doors.
That's unethical anyway. It should be if you are an automotive journalist, everyone needs to rent a Tesla every few months and cover the updates and cover all that stuff because this is the most important car company right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, and, in the EV space for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I've said this before and I completely agree with Kyle. I don't own a Tesla personally. And so I just make sure that every so often, every maybe 3 months, I spend a good amount of time in one. And particularly the software, it just gets better every time I use it. And I think that's what's really impressive. But if you haven't driven one in a period of time and then you're giving your opinion on the electric vehicle space and you haven't driven a Tesla in a while, that then you are at fault. Then you do need to go and spend not just an hour, but have one and live with one and just play with the software and delve into it. There's stuff that doesn't change. Like the ride still sucks. And the last Model Y I drove didn't have a parcel shelf, which just tickled me pink because, like, I just spent $60,000. Can you put some cardboard in the back, please? But I gather that the new ones come with one, right? So, but again, I want to drive a Model Y out of Germany, which I've not done yet. And that's, I'm at fault for wanting to come on and, you know, spout opinions about Tesla. I've not driven one out of that factory. So people have got to do that. I quite strongly believe, actually, people, if you're going to have an opinion on Tesla, you need to have driven one recently, because
at least once a year. And like, don't put your whole career on the line saying you can't drive a Tesla because they don't bring one to your house for $100. Right. That hurts. Like, right. Just go rent one once a year for $100 a year. And that way you can stay up to date and you can see what they're doing and do comparison tests and run the car side by side and take them on trips and charge them at home and see how they operate and get the app connected and everything. I mean, it's so great to use a Tesla in daily driving, and just driving more electric cars shows me that, hey, you know, the problems that we had in 2019 when more CCS EVs started to come out are the same exact problems we're having today. I'm seeing no improvement in ownership of these cars. And that's why I think I'm honing in on this a little bit more than I have in the past. As a car in a vacuum, when you ignore Tesla, the Ioniq 6 rocks. I would buy the Ioniq 5 all day long over this thing, though. Not even a question. For me, that's just my personal opinion. Some people like sedans. Somehow this thing won World Car Design of the Year, and it's the ugliest thing ever from the back. I don't know how that's possible. Were the journalists blind who did that? I don't know. But anyway, some people love the way it looks. Apparently, some people in the comments love the software. I think you're insane if you do. Sorry to offend you. And there you go. I just think Hyundai has a way to go. They've done so great. They're right on the edge.
Right. Yes. That in production. That in production numbers, you know, like.
Well, they're working. It sounds like they're working on that. And honestly, now that the tax credit is gone for these cars, the lots are filling up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Drove by a Hyundai dealer in Colorado Springs. They had like 20 Ioniq 5s just sitting there.
Okay. So maybe some, at least not marked up then.
There's a Hyundai dealer here in Greeley, Colorado, that's marking up Ioniq 5s still. They have an inventory. I went to one in Loveland. They're doing discounts on them, apparently. Ooh. Just a few $100 off, $500, something like that, $1,000. Okay. And, you know, one thing I have to commend Hyundai on, they're doing a really good job of this, is their new app called Evolve Plus. We've never talked about it. I don't know if you guys know about this, but there's a large gap between getting a rental car from Hertz for a month or two, which can get very expensive, to then leasing a car, which you're locked in for 1, 2, or 3 years, typically 3 years. And, you know, there's a lot of this like middle ground where someone's car just came off lease. They're waiting for their new car to come in. You need, you know, you're here visiting the country for work for a couple months. We don't have like a good subscription service. Hyundai came out with a subscription service, and it's not cheap, but it's cheaper than leasing a car and getting out of it. And it's called Evolve Plus. And I believe it's only electric. You can get a Ioniq 5 or Kona, and you can do them on a monthly subscription. And I don't know too much about it. The mileage limitations are pretty rough, but you know, still I found a Kona on there yesterday. I think it was $5.99 a month or something like that, which if you just need a car for a few months, yeah, it's a bad deal overall, but could be interesting to try to live with an electric car, you know, to sample it before you buy. So I have to commend them on at least trying this and getting their dealer partners to work with it.
Right. They do. Yeah. I was just thinking that you threw me off thinking of the Evolve thing. I was thinking of like an app like the Blue Link that they had on the have for Hyundai's that is actually draining 12 volt batteries, but that's a whole different issue.
All right.
So I don't know, anything else you want to talk about?
To wrap up the Ioniq 6, it's a very high quality product that's extremely well engineered, that unfortunately is really ugly, that you should just buy the Ioniq 5.
I mean, the Ioniq 5 has the utility of the hatchback. And
the range difference isn't like going to be the make or break unless you like I really don't know. I got to run them side by side, and I will soon. But to me, the Ioniq 5, like, I'll give up 30 miles of driving or whatever it is to then have all that extra utility and the much better looks and all of that coolness of the Ioniq 5.
Right on. Oh, I should mention, this is on the Out of Spec Guide channel, which, you know, you mentioned it before, but I hadn't, for whatever reason, looked at it. And there's like a ton of content up there. Max has been working really hard to put stuff together. And it's a, you know, it's a pretty great channel, actually.
Yeah, thank you. And Alyssa is now producing content for Out of Spec Guide. So you'll see her on there doing explainers, and Colton and me. And, you know, we're all, you know, this is all about the ABCs of electric car, the basics, the videos that the viewers of this show can send to their friends to answer questions, more or less.
Right on. Awesome. So yeah, definitely check that out. So you also posted up videos this week driving the Nissan Ariya in platinum trim with the e-Force drivetrain. So we've been waiting to hear about this particular edition for some time in hopes that the all-wheel drive would offer a more compelling experience than the front drive version. So, oh, and you also did an efficiency test with this in a, with this one in a separate video as well. So yeah, tell us about the Ariya with e-Force.
Driving-wise, rocks. Actually, one of the best driving electric cars, electric SUVs out there. Really, really fun. Unbelievably great suspension. Unbelievably great drivetrain tuning. The noise of the electric motors is good. I mean, a little nitpicky because they're non-permanent magnet motors. They're externally excited electric motors. They don't get the big jump off the line. So you have to, you nail the throttle and it builds up to about 30 or 40 miles an hour and then gives you full power. But when this thing is warm and full charged, it scoots like, and it pulls deep into the triple, into the triple digits, but then there's a limiter, but we don't need to talk about that too much, but it pulls really well at high speed. And that is where the good story ends with the Ariya, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, how would you like just that part of it though? How would you compare it to like the Ioniq 6 or the Ioniq 5 we were just talking about?
Yeah, that it would be a very interesting comparison to get both on a back road or do a little track thing. Not that people are buying these for the performance stuff, but you know, the promise of this e-Force drivetrain being fun to drive and exciting actually did come true. And it is when you really push the car hard, it's a 7/10 car where like you come out of a corner and you roll into the throttle and it gives the rear motor everything it can before, you know, really pulling in the front. And I thought they tuned the drivetrain really well. Just the whole way the car gets down the road is very high quality feeling, very good. I would hate the front wheel drive. I haven't sampled it, but I know that it would not be, you know, nearly as good because the whole fun part of driving this car is utilizing that rear motor and getting that push out of a corner and that little bit of rotation. But if you drive it too hard, you will spin inside wheel on the front axle, which is similar to like, you know,
the Chevy Bolt.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a little bit of front wheel driveness in there, which you can't really fault them much for, but you know, it's like, I wish it had a limited slip diff on the front at least.
Right. Oh shoot! I was going to ask something, and it just like popped out of my mind like a balloon. Oh my god! Okay.
You want me? I can just run through this car really quick because we're already at 42 minutes.
Yeah, I'll interrupt you when it comes back to my
head. And everything, everything's on YouTube, so none of these thoughts will be new or exciting to you if you go and check out the videos. It's $63,000 as tested, so you have to keep that in the back of your head and no tax credit. There are less expensive versions, which I hope will be more popular and I believe will be more popular. So they start at 40,000-ish, 42, 43, and go up to 63. I can't recommend the one I drove because that's just too expensive. You can buy a Model Y Performance for less money than this, and it gets the $7,500 tax credit on top of that. So like, okay,
let's just, it's
not to always compare everything to Tesla, but like, you would be so dumb to buy this over a Model Y Performance. But the less expensive trims of the Ariya might make more sense. I haven't sampled them. Colton has, and he's done build quality ones on the less expensive versions. He says they feel like crap on the inside. This one also kind of felt like crap on the inside. Little plastic materials, switch gear, speaker grills on a $63,000 car just were not fitting. It felt like you took a $25,000 car and then made it very expensive.
How was the material on the seats? Because I checked one out here in town, like the low spec, and the material on the seats, it felt like bad,
good. Had really high quality Napa leather on the seat cover.
Okay.
But then the sides of the seats are the same. So like your switch gear and like that thin plastic on the side bits are all the same. So like they put everything they needed to on the spec sheet to kind of justify the cost of the more expensive ones. But all the little stuff that you really notice as you spend time with the vehicle did not get updated. And, you know, I think that's a bit of a shame. So you got to go lower spec than this. There's no question. In terms of the driving dynamics, like I mentioned, that is the true highlight here and should be commended. And Nissan drivetrain and chassis engineers nailed it with this car, I think.
To get that,
a good job.
To get that driving feel, though, or that dynamic feel, do you have to have it in sport mode? Because I believe that's what you said puts it in more rear bias.
So like from a suspension standpoint, it's a fixed suspension. So like off throttle handling is the same no matter what you do. And that's like, it's soft when you really lean it over. You're like, oh, okay. Right. It's living room couch, but it's not meant to be a racer. To get the drivetrain to really perform the way you want, yeah, you drive it in sport mode. But to be totally honest, I kept it in standard 99% of the time because I'm just driving around here in my town and running little errands. And, you know, only when I see like a couple corners, I'm like sport mode on. You know, I knew the steering wheel commands to turn off traction control all the way. You go right, 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 select, select, and then you're off. And then you can just like huck it through corners and get some angles. And it was pretty good at it. But then everything else, not so great. So I think I want to talk about the efficiency and the range first.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Your video was called Thirsty Machine.
Yeah. It's not quite e-tron thirsty, but it's also not that far off. 2.9 miles per kilowatt hour at 70 miles an hour is pretty bad. And then, you know, the range isn't actually terrible. I got 240 miles out of it, which, you know, okay. Until you realize it's got a 10 kilowatt hour more usable capacity than an ID4 or an Ioniq 5.
And yeah, you're like, that's not great.
Okay, not that great. It has a 0.33 coefficient of drag, which the Model Y has a 0.23 coefficient of drag. And again, that's times surface area, so you can't directly compare those.
Right.
It shows the shape of the Aria really isn't optimized for EV. I do have to say, though, the thing looks great. I've kind of been against the Aria looks over the years, but then living with it this past week, I come out to that and I had it parked next to Colton's ID4 when we were on a shoot and we came out and I was like, wow, that looks so much better than the ID4. So much better, so much more modern, so much, you know, cooler. And there's three different grades of paint. There's like premium paint, premium plus paint, and then like premium plus plus. I don't, like their options make no sense for this car for the US market. But this one had like the nicest paint, which you can't even order from the factory. Apparently you can't get a red platinum plus in the US. This was a red platinum plus. I don't know how that happened. But the main problem I think with the Aria is going to be the value of the price. They have like 9 different trim levels that you can get, none of which make any sense to me at all. I don't know which one gets what. They're all named like equally unimpressive names. So like, you're not sure if the Evolve is better than the Empower. I'm like, which is like, those are just two words. Right. It's not like level 1, level 2, or level 3, or Porsche does Turbo and then Turbo S. Like, obviously you know which one's better. You don't know with the Aria. And then, you know, the range wasn't great, 240 miles. The charging is surprisingly not terrible on the initial charge. 130 kilowatt peak. So I'll have a video up maybe tomorrow or the next day about this. But from 0 to 6%, it sits at 85 kilowatts. From 6 to 48%, it sits at 130.
Okay.
From there, it starts to taper. But it's a very nice taper. And actually, you know what I can do? I was going to say I could share the screen, but I don't think I can actually. I'll have a video on this too. The charging curve up top, really, it lets you get a good mid-range and a good top charge. I mean, at 80%, it's still doing 80 kilowatts, 78 kilowatts, somewhere around there. So that's not bad. That's on the first charge. And then you charge it again and again, and it actually artificially limits its fast charging rate after a period of time. And we saw this in Bjorn Nyland's 1,000 kilometer challenge, where it was just capped at 90 kilowatts. And that was weird. I only got it to get down to about 115, but I didn't take the car on a road trip or do anything. It's possible the US spec cars are tuned differently, but I'd like to play around with that more when I spend more time in an Aria. The last point I just want to mention is if you have an Aria, there's two settings you have to be aware of. for the EV stuff, and they're in separate screens and separate menus, not related to each other. One has to do with battery cooling. The other has to do with battery heating. You would think they'd be right next to each other, but they're not, because software sucks in this car. And in order for battery cooling, you have to manually turn this on. And it seems like the car remembers it half the time and forgets it half the time. And that allows the cooling fans to run at a charging station at full speed. And that means you don't early taper when the battery gets hot. Why that's an option in our market, I have no idea. It has right. to do with Japanese noise regulations, I believe, where you can't have big fans going. But this is America. We don't care about noise. We want fast charging. You know, just let that thing rip. And then the battery heating is kind of cool. It does like some kind of manual preconditioning. And I did notice with the car, no matter, you know, sort of the temperature range that I was in, it was very sensitive to temperature, and it kind of just did its charging curve no matter what, which was great. Okay. And even though it doesn't have a peak charging speed, Model Y is exactly double, by the way, 260 kilowatts on Model Y peak charging speeds than this at 130. And by the way, that's a less expensive car, even fully optioned. I just have to mention that. Maybe yeah. not with FSD, but without FSD, sorry.
And, no one should pay for FSD anyway. So
right, I agree. And but the thing is, it's only an hour zero to full in the Aria, just because it has this nice, well-rounded curve. Right. So while it's not good for road tripping for the 10, 15-minute zap pop-ups and hop to the next station, it is good if you're an Uber driver, if you don't have home charging, for example, where you do need to do high, you know, high state of charge charges on a DC charger. It's really actually not bad at that. So the no big peaks, but the curves livable for those use cases, unacceptable for road trips.
Right on.
Yeah, that sounds, Kyle, that sounds zero to 100% in an hour. You know, it's, you said 87 kilowatt hour usable. So, I mean, you know, you're averaging almost 90 kilowatt the entire time you're charging. That's pretty good. You know, even, you know, a lot of people, we know we say this all the time, focus on peak charging rates. The charging curve is more important. You know, like you could get a car that can take in 220 kilowatts and it won't average 90 or 87 kilowatts over the entire charging period. So it's real interesting. But then again, you know, if you want to get to the nitty gritty, then you talk about, well, how good is it doing that short burst, you know, which a lot of people are going to use on road trips. So there's no one way to look at DC fast charging and say, this is how it should charge, you know, and for different use cases, it's better to have different types of algorithms that accept power. But I'm impressed that you can fully charge that thing in an hour. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, with you, a get peak 90, of, you get yeah. to 99. The, yeah, the 99 to 100 takes another almost
who
hour.
Cares about 99 to 100? You yeah. know, the, you yeah, get exactly. to 99%, you're fully charged, you yes. know, so, you know. But that's good. That's good to hear. Really good. And I just want to mention one thing. We had a comment here when you were talking about how the charging, the nomenclature for the trim levels doesn't make any sense.
Right.
I want to find this comment. Somebody made a comment on about, oh yeah, Scott said, well, the BMW i3 has the same problems. Mega, Terra, Giga. No, it doesn't, Scott. That makes all the sense in the world. Yes. You got Megabyte, Gigabyte, and then Terabyte. Like, you know which is lower trim and the higher trim. So I got to stick up for my i3.
Yes. I actually just drove yesterday? 2 days ago, an i3 first gen 2014. Oh, nice. And just as a little refresher, Colton was looking at one. He didn't end up buying it, but we took it on a little test drive, and I was just like, this is the best thing on the planet. Just love them so much.
That's a 10-year-old car, and it's they are so... it was the future when they made it, and I think they're still pretty much cool to drive.
There's every parts time of I drive car yeah. that are better than iX and i4 still.
Wow.
Every time I drive behind one on the highway, I love the silhouette in the back. Same. And too. Every time I drive with the glass that kind of mimics yeah. like a smartphone, the rear glass hatch, every time I drive behind one, I still look at it and say, that looks futuristic. And we're 10 years in. You know, so, you know, I know that it got a lot of hate for how it looks, the i3, when it first came out. Everybody said, that's not a BMW. That thing's, you know, terribly ugly and everything. But I tell you that, as you said, they were ahead of their time. And I think BMW did a fantastic job designing wise on that for what one small compact car. Could have had a bigger battery, you know, even from the get-go. It should have had a slightly bigger battery. But hey, it is what it was, and you know, we know the history on the i3. I still love them.
So we're just about up to our first hour, but Kyle, you had a sit down this week with Tomi Ristamäki, the CEO of Kempower, a company from Finland that produces DC fast charging equipment, which is also going to build a new factory in Durham, North Carolina. So this is a company a lot of people are excited about because, among other reasons, their equipment seems to be particularly robust. You spoke to him early. You spoke to him this time about reliability of charging units, but you had him on the Out of Spec podcast previously as well for a more general discussion. So maybe just not a whole lot of time, but maybe tell us a little bit about Kempower and what you think its involvement in North America will bring in the way of better fast charging experiences.
Well, you know, it's really hard to say because it's you know, proof is in the pudding. We need to see these units installed in our market with our power grid situations, with our frequencies, and to see how they hold up. But, you know, I will say I've used Kempower a ton in Europe, and they're extremely popular in the Scandinavian countries. And that's where I've spent a lot of time, thankfully, in Europe. So I've used, you know, I don't know how many tens or hundreds of charging stations with Kempower, but I'm very familiar with the units. So I like them quite a bit. It seems right now is the time where everything's coming into the U.S. Alpitronics about to launch in the U.S. Kempower is coming here. Those are the two that I said we needed in order to have reliable DC fast charging equipment. And guess what? This is the year. It's really 2024 will be the big year of installs, but like there's light at the end of the tunnel here for charger reliability. And at least with Kempower, they already have working sites, two or three different sites installed in North America online. There's one in Minnesota that's the closest to me. I may actually just run up there and film it and try it out and see how it's all going because it really is cool. Tomi, typically for our viewers know, I don't, and you guys know this, I don't really like talking to CEOs that often. I like to talk to the nerdy engineers about, you know, very in-depth topics. But Tomi is pretty much an engineer, even though he's the CEO. He knew every little detail about his entire product and was like, look, Kyle, we watch all the videos. We know what's going on in America. We know the problems that you guys are having. And he's not like saying we're going to be the best. He's like, we got to put them in. We got to try them out. We're going to make sure these are good to go. But keep in mind, he's saying that with like the highest reliability chargers in all of Europe. Right. So, you know, I think this is pretty promising here. The podcast is on the Out of Spec podcast channel, which we're starting to do more with again, finally. And yep, there we go. That's oh, someone said we could go to Texas Roadhouse in Minnesota. Hell yeah. Maybe we should do an out-of-spec meetup at the Texas Roadhouse in Minnesota. That's not sure where in Minnesota we'll go, but yeah.
We had a viewer, Marty Walsh, I think, is up there too. He's also a Kempower fan. He would love to, you know, meet you all up there, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do a little meetup at the Kempower station for the Minnesota folks. That'd be kind of fun. the meetup. The last thing I think I just wanted to touch on really quick was my Model S got a round steering wheel.
Oh, right.
And Tesla came out to my house and swapped it. And it was, I think, the first one in the country is what they were kind of telling me.
Okay.
And it's so much better now. It's
I loved your reaction. You couldn't hide your natural reaction of this is great. Like without wanting to, in your video, you were very respectful of, look, like I said about, you know, I come back to the grated cheese, my friend, but if you want a substandard steering wheel, you fill your boots. Like if you love your yoke, that's great. And we don't need to fight about anything, but it was so funny watching the smile on your face as you filmed your first drive with it. And I thought it was so nice because you were like, yes, this is great. And I was interested because it's a different wheel. It's a very different wheel to the Model 3, right? So it's different design and it suits the car. It's bigger.
Yeah, it's not as great in a performance setting as the Model 3 wheel. Model 3 wheel is small. You can work it really quick. This is not necessarily like EQS big, but it's somewhere in the middle. But Tesla got it right. It's still thin enough. The material doesn't feel that great. I took it for the first drive. I went on a 3-hour drive with it yesterday. I went up into the mountains, did a loop, and came back down and drove it hard. And, you know, just having the confidence of that round wheel, having track mode to dial in that car, the mountain pass brakes to really slow that thing down, and 295 section tires square, like that Model S for being a 12-year-old, 13-year-old chassis, however old it is now, or 10-year-old, I guess, 11. I don't know. It's old. It ripped. I was just like, holy smokes. This is just demolishing everything. And of course, the Plaid powertrain is just like insane. You have to recalibrate your brain. Like, I was driving the new BMW M2 this week, and I'm like, wow, this thing goes pretty good. Like, it's fast. And then I get in the Plaid, and I'm like, whoa, got to recalibrate, rewire the brain. You got to play it way early.
It's kind of amazing that the Model S Plaids isn't like a huge seller, like in that segment. Like, because they used to sell like 50,000 of those a year, right? Now it's like maybe 25,000, the S and X together. It's like the numbers are really way down.
I just saw something that said Taycan is outselling Model S.
Yeah, no, I would not be surprised.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an old design, and people like novelty. You know, that's just part of the human nature. We like.
Well, I also just think it's the economy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
just look at all luxury goods have just.
Yeah.
Tell us about they let you have the wheel, but not all of it, or the yoke, but not all of it.
Well, yeah, and so we had a great mobile technician come out, Jasmine. She was awesome. Rolled up in a P100D Model X, by the way. Just like, imagine getting to service in 2 seconds. Just like insane. And it was on snow tires. And where she covers the distance was really interesting. I was talking to her. She does like Wyoming and Nebraska, and like goes where there's no charging infrastructure. So she's like, sometimes I got to call a client and say, yeah, I'll come and fix your car, but can I use your level 2 charger while I'm there so that I can get back to charging network? And I was talking to her, and they just got her approved for the CCS retrofit on her Model X. So she'll at least have access to use some of this new infrastructure that's going into rural areas. So that'll be interesting to see how she handles it. And she left me with the yoke. But then took the airbag. I didn't ask for the airbag. Maybe she would have left it with me if I asked her for it. But at least I still have the original yoke. She said they didn't ask for anything back.
Okay.
Hey, I understand that, because that's an explosive.
Right.
So
which
I
thought would be really fun to explode.
What?
Like put it under the seat of the Nissan Leaf and see if it can ejecto seat through the roof.
Kyle.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So let's move along. So this week, with my Tesla Model 3 updated to FSD beta 11.3.3, I ran through my testing.
You got it.
Yes, I did. Oh, yeah.
Whoa. I still haven't. I've been waiting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. 11.3.3. Well, don't get your
congrats.
Because it's not really transformative. So this version takes the two different software stacks and, you know, kind of brings them together. So one unified, software stack, I guess. So that's supposed to improve on highway driving. And so I haven't done a lot of on highway driving with it yet, but that's coming. So I drove through my loop with my sister in the passenger seat this week. And that's up on my Drive Electric with Dominic YouTube channel. So go check that out, please. But basically, while there are some definite improvements, it still like falls on its face occasionally. So for instance, the police had a street blocked off, and after it changed lanes to go around the police cruiser, but then the road is still blocked off. There's like pylons and a Chevy Bolt EV, like the city's car, you know, was still blocking the road, and it wanted to, you know, go between them. No. So I had to disengage and, you know, go around. And there was another spot where, it refused to drive through this spot. There was a car kind of partially blocking the lane. It was like in the left-hand turn lane, but the tail end of it was sticking in my lane. And I could, you know, you could drive through there. There was plenty of room, but it did not want to do it. And so it came to a stop, and I had people behind me. So I touched the accelerator, and it was going to run right into the car. I had to disengage to steer around the corner, the back corner of this car. I swear it was going to hit it. If you look at the video, it's really at the last moment that I jerked the wheel so it doesn't, because, you know, when you're driving an FSD beta, you're still responsible. You're still in control. Yeah. And it still like stops like in front of traffic circles or roundabouts. It's like, I had to put the accelerator on, like here on the video we're watching, to get it to go into the traffic circle. And I still really need to figure out this routing situation, because I should have went straight there instead of this exit, because I put in my dude loop, my Drive Electric with Dominic loop. And I started with the first destination, and then I keep adding stops. But then when I go to try to do the loop, it goes to the last stop. So I don't know if I need to do the whole thing in reverse. If maybe there's no way to do it. I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that too much.
But congratulations on hitting 2,000 subscribers.
Oh, thank you. So I think it's still more safer and more enjoyable to drive myself, and still not worth $15,000. $15,000 is.
crazy if you buy this. You're paying them $15,000 to beta test, to help them improve their product. And hey, if you want to do that, if you want to be a beta tester, instead of getting paid, pay them to do it. If you think it's fun and it's cool, go right ahead. But it's unusable. Like, I would never buy this, never, until it's ready to be used, until you can, I can get in the car, hit a destination, and then kind of like do some work every now and then, glance up, you know, and grab things. But there's so many, you can't drive, you know, a few minutes without having to take over. Now, I'm sure there's some roads where it can just do its own thing and function, but you can't worry about that. And as far as I'm concerned, if you have to constantly be watching, then there's no use in even having it, other than to make fun videos and get a kick out of it and have some fun, which could be worth it, you know, if you enjoy doing that. But as a functional product to assist your driving, it's useless. And I, like, no way would I buy this. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Right. And I don't disagree. I think I mentioned to my sister in this video that they should pay us to be, you know, testing their software and improving it. But so I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on myself. I got some interesting stuff I want to shoot this weekend too. I got the playing with the music maker inside the car, whatchamacallit. Anyway, it's something coming up. Anyway, I'll have a new.
You're going to produce a song. You should release a song. By the way, for those of you who don't know, Dominic's in a band. You should release a song that is just created on Tesla's Music Maker.
Yes, it'll be in my next video. I'm going to use it to fill a space. I've took the license plate cover off the front of my car, the license plate on the front of my car, and there's long stretches of me with a fishing wire, just like struggling like a whatever, and. So I was going to speed up that footage and then play this little bit of music over it. But I've only got one so far. So, and it was something I just made up. And then I use that to learn how to, you know, to use this thing, because there's no instructions, right? This is like,
right.
It's not.
Yeah, you just got to hit every button and see what it does.
Right. It takes a while. So I'm going to take one of my songs that I've already written and then try to recreate it on this software, just, you know. I'll video that so people can learn how to, you know, actually work this stuff, because it's not that intuitive, you know.
Well, that's why you need a musician to teach us.
It's more, it's just touching all the things and see what happens. Yeah, I'll probably do that with Kay, my bass player. She helped me with this new song. She put like the bass line, and it all came together. So I think, anyway, it's like you can't do so much with it. You put so much information in there, it starts crashing.
Oh, really?
You can save often.
Yeah.
But anyway.
She's great. Kay's really good.
Yeah. All right. But so I wanted to get news, but we had a bit of news yesterday that I wanted to bring up real quick, that Walmart is going to add thousands of EV charging stations to stores by 2030. So this date is still a little ways out there. But I thought it was, you know, significant, because Walmart has a lot of Electrify America locations in about 280 of their stores, but they have 4,600 stores more than that in the U.S. That's a lot of stores, and I think it could be transformative depending on the speed which they can put the infrastructure in, because a lot of people, you know, they go to Walmart at least once a week. That could be their charging stop. Easily. I mean, for people who just, you know, do their, you know, 30, 40 mile commute, whatever, they don't have a garage, maybe they have the street park, but they go to Walmart once a week or more. And so while they're there doing the shopping, it's like an hour, you're going to be in Walmart an hour, you're doing all your grocery shopping, maybe a few other things. I think that, you know, it could really be like transformative and a really nice chunk of the, the charging infrastructure puzzle. This could really solve it for a lot of people. I don't know if anyone wanted to mention anything or say anything.
So is this that. Like your main supermarket in the US, where you know, that's the sort of the mainstream where families go to get their weekly shopping?
In a lot of places, yeah. I mean, they now have a lot, you know, there's most of them, or a lot of them have grocery stores inside them besides being a general goods store.
It's a bit like they have literally everything you can think of packed in a building, but then only some of them have the grocery store component. It's not typically where people shop for their food needs. It's like, I want to get some clothing. I want to get some car supplies. I want to get a new TV. Whatever. I don't know. People go to Walmart to buy literally everything. And
I've never found that equivalent that we have over here. So here we have the big supermarket chains. Tesco would be a famous one.
Marks and Spencer's?
No, not so. I'm talking about the big grocery shops. It's just huge, full of food. And in France and places like Carrefour, where it's just, just wine and cheese and food everywhere. And whenever I've been to the US, I've never managed to find an equivalent. I've always found either just like smaller grocery stores. I'm like, does America have these massive food?
Oh, we do. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Huge. I wonder if that was what Walmart was, but okay.
So more
we have
more,
like in this.
Yeah.
They didn't used to have Food Martin, but now more and more Walmarts have like supermarkets, and more people are starting to use Walmart as their supermarket. It's a giant mega store. It has, as Kyle said, everything. You could buy clothing, footwear, your TV, a fishing rod, tires for your car. Everything Walmart has. And, the thing is they have a tremendous amount of locations and they have huge parking lots. They could easily put giant facilities for charging if they wanted to. Now, here in the U.S., we have Costco, which is also a huge, kind of warehouse shopping. And they added gasoline stations at many of the Costco locations, and they sell gas really cheap. And it's like the most, the busiest type of gas station anywhere you go. There's lines to get to Costco. They're trying to limit you. You can only get it if you have a Costco account. So that way they're not getting their lines all clogged up by people that don't shop at Costco. I wonder if Walmart could do something like that and do like the Walmart charging network. And in order to use it, you need to be a Walmart super shopper or whatever and have like a Walmart card. So that's how you get access. And then they sell it for 10 cents a kilowatt hour, less than what the other networks are selling it for, because they know they have a captured customer on the lot for a good period of time. And a lot of times the people are going to walk in and spend $30, $40, $50, $100 in Walmart. I wonder if there's a business model for that, it's worth looking into. They have the real estate, they have the parking, it might be something worth considering if you're Walmart.
And would that be DC fast charges in your head?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking we might not have to go to that many 350s. You could have like a lot of lower, because if people are in there for an hour, they don't need 350 kilowatt stations.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Is it better to have 8 charges or 80 charges at those kind of massive?
More. 150 kilowatt chargers, a whole row of them.
Yeah.
It just needs site level power distribution. So like a Chem Power solution or Tesla supercharger, put as much DC hardware charging power that the grid connection will allow, and then as many satellite dispensers as you can, and let it load manage.
Yeah, it would be nice, since Walmart has like the resources like no one else does, it would be really nice to see them put like solar canopies over their parking lots as well. I'm just saying, throwing that out there.
They do in the desert.
Oh, really?
In hot climates. For example, there's one near Mojave somewhere out there that they have solar canopies throughout the Walmart parking lot.
Wow, that'd be so nice. That'd be nice in Florida, I know, because sometimes you have to park far from the building and it gets like 90, 100 degrees here, no problem. It's nice to have a canopy.
And Walmart could do this. You look at their balance sheet. They could invest $1 billion in installing, or $2 billion installing, chargers in all their locations, and it would just be like, it's nothing for Walmart. Yeah,
a little bit of battery storage, and they could, firm up the grid in their whole areas. So, they could be a sustainable energy situation going on, centered on all these stores.
Well, the thing Walmart is the cost. They're going to try and find the cheapest hardware and sell it at the cheapest electricity rates. And, it might work really well. So we'll see.
We'll see. Interesting thing is the dwell time will increase on their property with their customers that DC fast charge. And there's proven you know, this has been proven. If somebody's in your store for a longer period of time, they spend more money. Yeah, I did a study on this, if you want to call it a study. But when I had my chargers, they were level two chargers at my restaurant years ago, I used to pay attention and write down when customers would come in and plug in. I had my managers always tell me whenever they saw someone plug in coming, we'd write the time they came to sit down to eat, and then we'd write the time they left. And I noticed when people were charging in the charger of my parking lot, they tended to stay 30 minutes longer than the average dwell time for a customer that just came in to eat. And that's a big, 30 minutes is a lot more. When the average customer was staying 30 to 40 minutes at my restaurant, now they were staying an hour and 15 minutes. It made a difference. And they would, instead of just eating and leaving, they would then have a cup of coffee and a cake, you know, which was all sheer profit. Restaurants want you to buy dessert because it's 100% profit for them. They've already made their money on the food, or they'd right. order a salad before because they knew I need to be here for an hour to get to where I'm going. So, you know, there's proven. And like I said, mine was not really a comprehensive study, but there's comprehensive studies out there that that prove when you're there longer, you spend more money. And it's why, interesting thing, I read a whole study on this years ago. It's why supermarket music is very slow, it's not upbeat music, because right. they studied you walk faster down right. the aisle when the music is an upbeat beat. When it's a slow, like elevator music, you kind of just mosey on down the lane. And just by spending an extra 10 minutes in the supermarket, you spend on average $10 more or something like that. There's a whole study done. So Walmart could use that and say, look, we've got a captured customer. They're plugged in, and hey, we'll make money on the purchases, even if we give them the electricity it costs. So
that was my question about the speed of charging. Because if you're charging too fast,
right.
maybe it's because I'm more conscientious than some EV drivers, but I know that if my car is 80%, I get a little bit stressed that I want to go and move my car. Or if the queue is, oh, I've ended up just browsing for longer and I'm charging my car I want to go move it, or like, we should get going now. So there is probably going to be a sweet spot on the charging speed as well. That's right. not too fast, not too slow, because if the car is full in 18 minutes, you're like, I got to go. I got to move, especially if there's an overstay fee or anything like that. So yeah, they'll work all this out. That's really interesting to think about.
Yeah, so I just wanted to bring that up because I just think it's like a potentially a huge, you know, big deal. But I mean, we, like Kyle says, I mean, we have to see what actually happens on the ground in reality, because sometimes, you know, the dream doesn't often live up to, you know, expectations in the reality. But whatever. Yeah. Let's talk about a couple news items real quick. The Ram 1500 REV electric pickup truck made its official debut in a Super Bowl ad, but we didn't get to get any we didn't get to see any specs until like this week. So I don't know what you all expected, but I didn't quite expect this. I mean, they say good things come to those who wait, and at least on paper, this thing looks pretty great. So let's talk about batteries for a moment. Ram REV is going to have two different battery options, a 168 kilowatt hour pack. The estimate is good for 350 miles of range, and a 229 kilowatt hour pack. They claim can go 500 miles on a charge. So contrary to what I expected, at least for now, there was no mention of a range extender for a plug-in hybrid version. So it's an 800 volt architecture, and they say peak charging power is 350 kilowatts. It also features bi-directional charging, so you can power as much as like 7.2 kilowatts worth of electric stuff off board, off the back. I think the front has a 3.5 or something kilowatt hour outlet, you know, worth of power up there. It's got 250 kilowatt motors on each axle, so it puts out 654 horsepower, 620 pound-feet of torque, and they say it can hit 60 from zero in 4.4 seconds. So it can also tow up to 14,000 pounds, and it has a 2,700 pound payload. So a couple of other things I think are worth mentioning real quick. It has an active leveling air suspension with adaptive dampers and multi-link rear suspension, which is great. So the handling and ride should be pretty great. It also has a huge frunk with 15 cubic feet of storage space. So, Tom, have you ever reserved one of these? It sounds like it'll give your one F-150 Lightning a little bit of a run for its money.
So I have, and I don't even think it's reserved. I don't know what I've done. Okay. All I know is I gave them money, and I'm in a club, like the Ram Club. It's weird. Like, you don't have a reservation. You're just invited to be like one of the people that at some point will be able to reserve one later on the road. So later down the road. And it's kind of weird what Dodge did with this. But in any event, looks really cool. I checked it out at the auto show yesterday. You know, really cool. It's interesting that styling wise, like, we saw that concept and it looked so futuristic and so sleek. But now when you see what they're doing here, it kind of, like, it's very pedestrian. You know, the exterior styling, at least, it almost looks like it could be a truck that came out 3 years ago. You know, the front grille has some interesting with the headlights and everything. But when you do a walk around, it's interesting how Ford and Dodge both went with, like, okay, we just want these to look like normal trucks. Nothing out of the ordinary. But GM went in a different direction with the Silverado. It's kind of like a futuristic, funky kind of styling, you know. So it's interesting how that worked out. I was expecting Dodge to do something a little bit more wild based on their concept, you know, but this is what we're getting. Interior look really cool. Specs are pretty interesting. 229 kilowatt hour battery pack.
It's huge. I mean, it's like the Silverado EV's got the big battery like that too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an enormous battery pack. You know, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to have some good specs for towing. If you get the bigger battery pack, you know, you'd probably be able to tow further with it, but you're still going to have that same issue. If we don't improve our infrastructure for DC fast charging, you're still, you know, pulling into a DC fast charger with a trailer. Yeah, you'll be able to go an extra 40 or 50 miles in this than you would, say, with a Lightning, or maybe 70 miles more. But, you know, if you're going hundreds of miles, you still need pull through charging stations that are really basically non-existent at this point in order to make it work. So, yeah. You know, it's an evolution. It's that much better than the Lightning in some regards, but it's coming out a few years later. It should be better. It should do things better. It should go further. You know, and it's going to be interesting how the whole truck scene plays out over the next couple of years.
I like the, it seems like outdo, like, the, so it's 1 cubic foot bigger, I think, than the frunk, and the front is 1 cubic foot bigger than the Ford F-150 Lightning.
Yeah.
The 0-60 is like point of a second quicker than the Chevy Silverado EV, like 4.5 seconds to 60.
It's not as quick as the Lightning. The Lightning's quicker.
Is it really? What's the Lightning?
Lightning's pretty much 4 seconds flat.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, because it didn't have a huge 200 kilowatt hour battery to pack to hang around.
Yeah.
Also, the range is a little bit suspect to me. I don't know. So they said 500 miles on this 35 kilowatt hour pack. But the Silverado EV is like 400 with, you know, probably 200. I mean, I don't know if it's like 200 kilowatt hour pack. I don't know if that's, not sure if that's usable or what. So I don't know. It seems like the 100 miles is like a big delta, you know, but maybe
for roughly the same size packs, you know. Yeah. Maybe, you know, it does seem interesting. Well, who knows? You know, maybe GM is under promising, you know, and when the Silverado EV gets EPA range rated, now all of a sudden it's 430, you know, and the Dodge comes out at 480 because of whatever they did. Maybe the battery's a little bit bigger, maybe they're letting you use more of the capacity. I don't know. You know, it does seem, I can't imagine it being 100 miles more than the Silverado, you know, unless the battery ends up being a lot bigger.
But it, you know, it does seem like they have a contender here. Like they've got pretty much everything they need. What do you think, Kyle?
Sorry, I had to find the unmute button.
Sorry.
I actually think like, this could, so first of all, the Hummer EV had a massive battery pack like this, and I thought it was really funny, and like, this is like hilarious because it's very excessive, and it's, you know, USA being USA, like this comment said, and I was like, you know what, for such a low production Hummer EV halo car, like, that's cool, I'm all about that, you know, let's go big bad and do some crazy things. now we're starting to get into some higher volume trucks here, and these are having huge battery packs. That's like, to me, what would be more useful is to put a 75 kilowatt hour battery pack in this and then a little generator in the back, like an i3 range extender thing. And I think, you know, 99%, or let's say 90% of this truck's use case would fit into that 75 kilowatt hour, you know, usage. And then for the towing stuff, even the 200 kilowatt hour pack is going to suck to tow with. So, you know, that's when you're going to want the extended generator anyway. So I'm not 100% sure why you would need such a big battery pack or so much range in these trucks, other than they're just doing too many focus groups and listening to too many people who really haven't lived with an electric truck before to build these. Now, of course, there's always going to be a use case or the, you know, the outliers that will use every bit of this pack on a consistent basis. And it's great to have that option. It just seems like a lot of battery in an EV, but I think Ram got it right. All the specs look good. 80 amp onboard charger, 350 kilowatt charging. We'll have to look at the curve. You know, Stellantis is not new to building electric cars. They're one of the larger electric vehicle manufacturers, at least in Europe. We don't get any of that here, but they know what these things will go through. They understand how these need to be engineered. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's going to be expensive to charge. If they give this thing free charging, oh my gosh, they are going to lose so much money.
Yeah, I don't think they
3 years of free charging.
So, and to Kyle's point, that larger battery pack is an option,
right?
So it's not like they're saying 229 kilowatt hour, this is what you're getting. Only the people that want that or need that or think they need that are going to pay for it, because it will be substantially more expensive than the smaller pack. And the smaller pack, it's, you know, how do you say that's the smaller pack? What is it?
168
kilowatt hour.
That's, you know, huge.
It's still bigger than the battery pack of my Lightning. The Lightning's gross capacity, I think, is 145. So, you know, it's still bigger than the battery pack of my Lightning. And that battery pack is going to be fine for more than 90% of Ram Rev owners, you know. You know, I like having optional packs. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of takers on the extended range pack, you know, unless you just have more money than sense and you just decide that you want to just throw money at it. There's a use case, as Kyle said, for a small amount of people in the Midwest that want an electric battery truck, that do towing, that want to squeeze out every mile they can. And even for them, it's not going to be the perfect solution, because if you do need to drive 700-800 miles, even with this big battery pack, you still are going to have to stop. We still don't have proper infrastructure to do pull through charging. You know, who knows, maybe that's going to change in the next couple of years, but you know, it's good that the pack's optional. That was basically my main point here.
Right. So we should move right along. I don't know if we need to say any more about this. We need to drive this thing, but I'm pretty happy to see it, though, right? It looks like I'm kind of surprised that they went like this big, this, like, you know, bold, like tech wise, spec wise. So the other big news this week, I think, is that Tesla has just sort of teased three new vehicles. So it released the written version of its master plan part 3, which is a 41-page document that you can find on their site, and it outlines a plan for a global sustainable energy economy. In those pages, they list the various vehicle types that Tesla makes and will make in the near future, except for the Roadster, they don't mention that, along with the battery sizes and chemistry and the hoped for production volumes. So we all probably know that the company has a more affordable model planned. In this document, we're told that we'll have a 53 kilowatt hour LFP battery, and they hope to make 4 million of them a year. Eventually, that's 2 million out of the Mexico Gigafactory that was just announced, and then 2 million split between Berlin and Shanghai somehow. So the other new vehicles will be, according to this document, a van in both passenger and commercial flavors, along with a bus. So interestingly, the volumes for the van are higher than the Model S, Model X, and Cybertruck combined, and it will have a high nickel battery. The production volumes for the bus seem to be a bit more modest, of course, and it's going to have like an LFP 300 kilowatt hour pack. So, Martin, that's a lot of small cars and van sales. We don't need a lot of analysis here, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are.
I think because this is so far off in the future, and you know, you can play the where's the Cybertruck card sure. if you want, that Tesla can talk about these things all they like. On a really broad perspective, I'd love to know listeners' thoughts in the comments. Make sure you leave your thoughts and join in the conversation as well about where, you know, if people feel that one company, one badge can do everything from selling $150,000 Model S, Model X, got a bit cheaper recently, down to a compact car, a budget car, a van. Vans are going to get wrecked. They're working vehicles. They're going to be used. I don't, you know, if I see a Fiat Ducato or a Renault Master or something that's got dinks and dents all over it and it's delivering some Amazon parcels, do I think, man, I really, really, you know, one day I'll save up and I'll buy a Renault? You know, so what I'm saying is, what I think it's amazing that Tesla are doing this. They're setting out their roadmap. I think that's very cool. The discussion, I think, will be interesting to have over the next, you know, few years, just sort of kick it around, really, is can Tesla do that? You know, can Tesla have everything at all price points? Because Toyota don't. So they know that they've got to have, you know, a Lexus to go and sell. And we've had that conversation on the podcast today about a $60,000 Nissan Ariya. And if I say to my, you know, my wife who's not into cars, here's this car, she'd look at that and go, yeah, 25, 30 grand. You go, no, that's £60,000 for a Nissan. And again, if I was like, oh, hey, let's get the new Audi or the new, you know, Mercedes-Benz EQC and it's this much, she would get that's the trade-off. It's going to hold its value. And so, yeah, really interesting to see what electrification is. On a broader perspective, what EVs do to the car industry. I think VW have changed their tune a bit recently, talking about, you know, why would we get rid of the Golf name? Because Golf is famous. And so ID3 is great, but what's wrong with the word Golf? And so everyone's exploring this. Tesla will have to explore it as well. Could there even be Tesla vehicles that don't have a Tesla badge on? You know, a little bit like the Amazon vans that Rivian are making. So yeah, that's the broad perspective on where does that company go in terms of the cars they sell and then the money, the premium that until now Tesla has commanded, that I think already they're starting to lose. I don't see a Tesla anymore and think, wow, you know, which, you know, 5 years ago you think, oh, that's cool, right?
Right.
And just Model 3s everywhere. Like, and you know, if I lived in California, it'd be you know, even more. So really interesting that they're setting this out. I think it'll be fascinating to watch how they navigate that. There'll be some marketing decisions to be had at the company.
People in the comments are pointing out that Mercedes kind of does this, though, right? They sell small cars, vans, and big trucks, right?
So, well, the Mercedes dealership just down the road from me have Mercedes and Smart on one lot, and I get that, which I always think is an interesting thing to do. The whole Smart thing that Mercedes went down, which, okay, that's interesting that they use a different name, and you know, and there's different investment in that brand now. But yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, the smaller. You know, you see that, you see beaten up old Mercedes A-Class and you think, ah, oh, that's a wreck. Like, that's a terrible thing to have a Mercedes badge on. So yeah, it's,
right. We don't have the A-Class here.
It doesn't really work.
Martin, have you seen the new hashtag number one thing, Smart?
Yeah.
Are they out?
I've not seen one driving around. I'm not sure if they are out or not. But again, it's interesting with that Chinese investment in that, because That's a whole different thing to come in, you know. Do we care what brands stand for anymore? I think hopefully soon we'll start talking about the when it comes to Europe and Australia and UK, I think they'll call the BYD seal the Atto 4. I always talk about the Atto 3 at the moment, but again, there's a car that's 2/3 of the price of a Tesla. Do people care where that car comes from? Will they pay the Tesla premium? What was that that old cliche years ago? It's the Tesla stretch. People do the Tesla stretch to get one. I'm not sure that exists anymore, but I'd like to have that conversation with people in the comments and let us know what you think.
Well, this is really close to home right now, because two of my colleagues are buying cars this week, and Max is buying an electric car and Ryan is buying an electric car, and Ryan is going from a Bolt to a Model 3 LFP.
Nice.
And so, you know, just like made the right sensible decision, I thought. And like, you know, that's just the car. That's great. Max is like, everyone has a Tesla. Ryan's getting one. You have them. Like, I just don't like, I know how good they are. I just don't want one. He's like, you know, we have enough to make videos with. And he's like, I'm going to spend more money and buy a used Polestar 2.
Oh,
really?
And so,
what a great choice.
Right. And so anyway, we found a really nice one. It's got performance pack with the Olean's and all the good stuff. So like, that'll be sweet. And so hopefully that all goes through. He hasn't fully committed to it yet, but it was really funny talking to him because he's like, you know what? Everyone has Teslas. And that to him turned him off from it. He's like, yeah, I know the car's better, but I just want something different.
Sure. Yeah. We're all different. Right. All right. So I think, what do you think? That brings us to the end of our show, I think.
Yeah, probably, I imagine.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, wait, we didn't talk about, there's one big news story. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure,
now order a Model Y 4680 directly from the site.
Oh, I didn't know where you couldn't before. You can specify.
Inventory. So yeah, now you can order a standard Model Y for under $50,000. It's still dual motor. And it still gets the $7,500 tax credit. So that's a good one to look at there.
Okay, yep. 270 miles of range. That's good.
Yeah, I still think it's worth it to spec up for the long range version. It's only a few thousand dollars, and you know,
it's
a little much more range.
Yeah, $3,000 and
50 miles.
Oh, geez, yeah. Yeah, 330 is pretty comfortable. You know, that's probably what 300 on the highway, right?
Yeah, probably not. Probably less than that.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to go rent one of these today. Okay. They have them locally, the Model Y non-long range. I've never tested one. So I think I'm going to go to Hertz and borrow one and do a range test and make some videos with it.
Sweet. That sounds like a good idea. I think I'm going to watch how to spec videos this afternoon.
Yeah, by the way, our first podcast, 45 minutes long.
Oh, really?
Boy, have we smashed that these days.
Doubled it.
Yeah, and and that was not live too. That was like pre-recorded, and you know, you had to spend time editing. But now, so the editing, the runtime's longer, but the editing time is like a lot shorter now.
Yeah, Kyle used to make the intros, that fancy intro that it had, and I used to do other bits as well. And I think after two or three shows, we both said, "We're not doing this anymore. Let's just do it live."
What are we doing here?
Well, I want to thank everybody, all of our watchers, all the years, you know, 3 years. This has been an amazing run. We've had millions of views and listeners, and it's inspired us to keep doing this. If it kind of, we just kind of started this and said, hey, let's give it a shot. If you remember, it's right when COVID started, in April of 2020. And we were like, well, let's give it a shot. You know, maybe it'll fizzle. Maybe nobody will be interested. Right. But it turned out to be a smashing success. Everywhere I go, you know, people talk about the Inside EVs podcast. Oh, I watch you on the podcast, you know, and it's been great. And that's what kept us from continuing doing this. And you guys are the best, and you're the reason why we get together and do this every week. And, you know, as long as you keep watching, we're going to keep doing it. And thanks a lot. There's one last thing I want to point out before we sign off. I mentioned last week in our, there we go. Jeez. I mentioned last week in our, on the show that I'm going to be selling my Rivian R1T, and I have a friend that wants to buy it. He's having a little difficulty selling his Model X for enough money to be able to buy my Rivian R1T. And we had some comments in last week's show saying, Tom, I thought you might offer it to the buyers. So I'm selling my Rivian R1T because I'm getting a Rivian R1S. It's got 7,000 miles, forest green, ocean coast interior, great color combo, every option possible. It is, if you were to spec the same truck now, it's $97,050, and it doesn't even have some of the things that I have on mine because they canceled some of the options. So basically, I was going to sell it to my buddy for $15,000 than what it would cost to buy it new now. If anybody's interested, tom.mulligany@insideevs.com, and make sure you put in the section where the title of the email, God, I can't get that word out. Rivian R1T, because I get like 50 emails a day, and I don't even respond to many of the emails, but then I'll know you're interested in talking to me about that. So I'm still planning on selling it to my buddy, but I need to sell this now because the R1S is ready. Rivian wants me to pick it up. And if he, if it's going to take too long for him to get things going and somebody else is ready to buy it, we could talk about it. So shoot me an email if you're interested.
Right on. Awesome. I'm interested, but I'd have to sell my house.
I would have to live in the truck.
You could do that.
Yeah, I don't think my wife and my cat would be happy with that.
if it still had the camp kitchen, you live in it.
But, exactly.
You know,
all right. If it had the camp kitchen, that would change everything.
That's a contributing factor to why I sold. I'm selling this over the Lightning. I wanted the camp kitchen. I ordered it with the camp kitchen. If it had that, then it would have been. I would have really been thinking about. You know, that would have helped push it closer to keeping, but, and now it's like canceled. It's not even, they've been delayed. I think they're just done. Like, okay, we're not doing that. And that's disappointing because it was such a cool feature.
Hey, just sorry, one more little thing. Abe mentioned earlier, we didn't even go over the ID7. Actually, Seth Miersma, our editor in chief at Motor One, he drove it and he was going to come on this morning and talk about it, but he had a lot of things come up and he couldn't do that. I don't know if anyone, Kyle, you haven't driven the ID7 yet, right?
No, but Bjorn has a great video, top speed on the Autobahn in it. Watch that. That's the one to watch.
All right. But hopefully, yeah, we'll get it. We'll drive it at some point, you know, probably sooner than later. And we'll, you know, let you know what we think. But for now, that brings us to the end of our show. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget you can follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tom Malog with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm now verified on post.news at Dominic. My first verified account ever on social media. I'm pretty excited. So click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all for watching these past 3 years. We really appreciate you. It's great to see all your names, familiar names coming up in the comments every week. Right. We'll see y'all next week. Ciao.